Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast. I'm Caroline Kenyon, and in this episode, I'll be talking to two of my colleagues at the Innovation Agency, Dr. Liz Meir and Dr. Phil Jennings. I'll be asking them about how COVID-19 has impacted on our work, how we've adapted to the new ways of working, and what it means to our offer to the health and care system and the wider economy.
With me today is the Chief Executive of the Innovation Agency, Dr. Liz Meir, and the Deputy Chief Executive, who is the Medical Director, Dr. Phil Jennings. Welcome both.
Hi, Caroline.
Hello. We're on Zoom. We're recording this on Zoom, so we can see each other, but obviously those listening can't see you. But Phil, you're sitting very comfortably at home with your headphones on, and you've got a professional microphone in front of you. So I have got equipment envy here. How are you doing working from home? How have you adapted? Obviously quite well with the technicalities.
Well, yeah, there's always an excuse to buy a bit of new tech. But I think, the working from home's been a bit of a shock, really. Having been someone who, well, pre-COVID was out of the office a lot, travelling a lot, maybe in London 2 or 3 days a month at least. That's obviously all changed, and I spent my time at home in a single room with children around as well, to kind of throw into the mix with the whole homeschooling thing going on and having to feed them. And it's all been very strange. I think having had it now for, 3 months, I'm starting to adjust to a new normal, but it's certainly been a big change for me and my family working in this way.
Are there things you don't miss? Are there positive changes for you personally?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't miss the commute. I don't miss sitting on the M56 for hours at a time or up and down the M6. And I don't miss that business of standing in the foyer at Euston, looking up in desperation to see what platform a train's going to come on. And I suppose that's just something that I just thought was normal. Whereas more recently, we've done the same meeting, but over, say, Zoom or Teams. And the meeting's finished, and then suddenly I'm finished and I can go spend some time at home or with my family, as opposed to spending, 2 or 3 hours traveling. So that's been great. So I've enjoyed that part of the time that's given me back personally.
And what about you, Liz? What have been the pros and the cons of working from home during COVID?
So I think working from home at the beginning was a bit of a shock. I'm out and about all week, going to our own sites, going out to partner sites. I'd be in London probably at least once a week. So it was a bit of a shock, but actually I adapted quite quickly because I realised I could do quite a lot more by using remote technologies, and I could talk to people across the country, talk to our regional stakeholders, talk to people internationally as well, and fit in a lot more in the day. So I think I adapted quite quickly. I haven't got young children at home. My son's working from home. My husband's retired, so he's been supplying me with cups of tea and food during the day. So I did adapt quite quickly. And I have found that I'm more productive. I do think it's quite intense. Staring at a screen all day is quite intense, but I think I've embraced it. So another benefit of working from home and using virtual ways to communicate with people has been the effect on the climate and the environment. So at the Innovation Agency, because we cover a big geographical area, we're driving a lot, we're in London a lot, so we're on the train, we do a lot of international work, so we're flying, and that all impacts on the carbon footprint. We want to have a sustainable future, so using these different methods of communication really helps towards that. And if we can embrace that and hold on to that, that will help us moving forward into the future. And the other thing that we've seen is when people were told that they had to stay at home but they could go out for a walk, people getting out there, getting into the beautiful countryside, finding places that they've not found before. And we know that there's a great benefit for health of being out in green and open space. So it would be great to hold on to some of that as well, to try and keep making some time so that we can be out in the open space, revitalising our minds and improving our mental and physical health.
You're somebody who's usually up and down the motorway, on trains, even flying abroad quite regularly, aren't you? So yeah. You've not missed that?
I've missed it to some extent, and I really did at the beginning because I was just used to that lifestyle and I'd never questioned it. And I do miss seeing people in person. But the team have fed back to me that they see more of me. They see more of each other. The Innovation Agency's got a number of offices across the region. So to reach out to people in those offices, you were commuting, travelling quite a long way to the offices. So we've seen more of each other and being able to work together in a closer way by spreading some of the products with the help of team members who we can get hold of a bit more quickly. So I did at first miss the commute and miss the busyness, but now I'm being busy in a different way that's hopefully more productive.
And how has the normal work of the Innovation Agency been impacted by COVID? What is it that the Innovation Agency normally does which has had to be changed?
So we normally run in big national programmes that we run alongside our colleagues in the other 14 HSNs. So some of those have continued and others that we felt weren't going to directly support the COVID effort or the recovery effort, we put on the back burner. We'll be starting those later on in the year. But we have, as we talk to small businesses who we support around the patch, we've pivoted our business. So we'll always say to them, you've got to be flexible, you've got to pivot, you've got to adapt. And we've adapted our businesses and we went out to the system and said, what do you want us to do for you? We went out to our healthcare partners, our university partners, our business partners. So we adapted and pivoted, and we spent the first probably 2 months of the COVID period dealing with new business ideas, assessing businesses, triaging them, introducing them into the system, and we've been really successful at doing that. So our normal business function, we expanded, it was all hands on deck. How do we triage those businesses? How do we find the solutions that are good for the system, and how do we deploy them?
It's been really interesting that we've switched overnight from what was a very kind of personal packed office where there was lots and lots of physical contact, lots of banter, lots of fun, to a completely digital organization. So I haven't seen my team for 3 months face to face. So we had to really rapidly change. And so we've been holding obviously all of our normal team meetings just over Zoom or Teams, and then all of our ordinary work as well. So I think that's been a bit of a challenge to maintain that kind of atmosphere that we all like about working here in the Innovation Agency. It's much more difficult over a digital medium. But actually, on reflection, I'm surprised in many ways how well that has worked. So, you know, we've had quizzes. We've even had a whole away day held over Zoom where people actually went, you know, to, you know, huge efforts to change their backgrounds. And then we were annotating slides. And I think, albeit we'd kind of dabbled with Zoom and things like that in the past, we'd never really embraced them. And it's amazing what you can do if you put your mind to it. And I think we've started to become fairly expert at how we can run meetings and things over a digital medium. So that's meant that kind of our day workers has still managed to go on by and large. There's been some programs that we've just had to stop because of COVID. So for instance, we were looking at rolling out some genetic testing for familial hyperlipidemia for people with high cholesterol. Now we've not been able to do that because all of that capacity has been moved into COVID, which is fair enough, which is rightly so. So that program's been paused. But other programs, we've had to just change the way that we deliver them. So for instance, there's a program called Pincer that we've been doing with GP practices, which looks at their prescribing. Now we were running face-to-face training sessions, but we've moved all of that onto Zoom. There's another program called Escape Pain, which was an education and physio program for patients with osteoarthritis. And again, we've had to move that wholesale onto a digital platform, which has been quite a big challenge for us, but actually we've managed to get around that and it's worked quite well. And then finally, for some of our other programs, it's been obvious that we just had to accelerate those. So some of our work in care homes, for instance, has been really important throughout the whole COVID period. So we've accelerated that and put more effort into it. And there was another area of work that we were doing around tracheostomies. So obviously a lot of people ended up on ITU with tracheostomies with COVID. So that was an area of work that very quickly became evident that we needed to put some more resource into. So it has changed our focus. And clearly, I think some of what we'd planned initially has changed quite a bit. And we've really refocused to play our part in the fight really against COVID. And that's kept us all energized to think throughout, because certainly for those of us who are close to the front line or who have friends or colleagues who've been working in hospital, we've seen how hard that is. So we want to make sure that we're playing our part as part of the NHS as well. So it's been really important to us to be able to do that.
And of course, the Innovation Agency, while it's part of the NHS, is outside of the actual system, the delivery of all the services. So how has the Innovation Agency found its role? How has it understood what's going on when everybody's under such pressure and everything is so critical and so urgent? How have you worked out how you can be most effective and helpful?
So maybe I'll start. I mean, we've tried to integrate ourselves with the response that the NHS has made. So during COVID, the NHS had to declare an emergency situation. So it's operated in a different way than it ordinarily does. So NHS England has taken a kind of a command approach where they've coordinated the efforts of a number of different commissioners and providers across our patch. So we've worked hard to get into that structure and make sure that we're represented in the different panels and committees who are planning the response. And then I think as AHSNs together, we've offered each other quite a lot of mutual support. So again, we've shared emerging themes very rapidly. I think if you think back to the start of COVID, you'll remember that London and the Southeast were probably about 4 weeks in front of us here up in the Northwest. But what we were able to do was share some of the emerging evidence that was coming out from, say, ITU as to how patients were being best managed. And then similarly, there's been other examples of where good pieces of work, so work around long-term conditions digitally in primary care, for instance, has been shared very quickly across the AHSNs, where it's been seen to obviously help.
Yeah, and I think we quickly moved into working with our partners and finding out what their needs were. And one of the partners who we work with really closely are our local enterprise partnerships across the region. They've been really focused on economic recovery. Myself and some of the team are sitting on the economic recovery panels to look at what we can do in the health and life sciences space to help the economy to start to recover. So we know there's going to be a big impact on jobs, disadvantaged communities, a further disadvantage by the impacts of COVID. So we want to play our part in supporting those people into work, supporting the system, growing the businesses. And we've sat around the board table with our local enterprise partnerships and worked out what we can do to support that future focus post-COVID. And also what we can do to support the businesses that we've been supporting in the health and life sciences space to make sure that they continue to grow jobs, they land contracts, and that they are really helpful to the residents who are in the region, because we know that they need some support, and some of the products we are supporting can give that help on a day-to-day basis.
I think that economic factor is really important, Liz. And unfortunately, when we've been looking at the figures, we've seen that the Northwest has been probably the worst region in terms of both the levels of COVID that we've seen, but also the death rate. And part of that's undoubtedly due to some of the levels of deprivation that we see. So I think by attracting economic growth, bringing more jobs into the region, jobs bring prosperity that brings generally better health outcomes. So something that we forget about maybe in the NHS sometimes, that the health is wealth and that we need to look beyond just medical treatments in terms of helping our population to be stronger and, you know, level up some of the outcomes that we see across the country.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Phil. And I think one of the things that we also are encouraging is that our health service employers are anchor institutions in the community. Their supply chain includes the businesses that we support. They have vacant jobs that we could maybe deploy and train people into, so we can make a real difference working together so that we don't perpetuate that disadvantage and inequality.
So, Liz, how has the Innovation Agency helped businesses who are impacted by COVID? But also, there were a lot of businesses coming forward with offers of help, weren't there? And they were almost inundated in the system at one point. So how did the Innovation Agency help with that situation?
So as you say, Caroline, trusts, NHS frontline organisations were absolutely overwhelmed by the positive support offers that they were receiving from business. But the downside of that was that they just couldn't cope with all the offers they were receiving because they were dealing with a crisis. So we stepped up to take all those business support offers from them, assess them, talk to the businesses, give them advice if the product wasn't or service wasn't just what was needed, and then support those that had successful interventions to gain contracts and land those in the trusts and the health and care setting. So we were really successful, actually. So in our first quarter of this year, we saw nearly 75% of the numbers of businesses we saw in the whole of last year. We supported 16 companies to gain contracts worth over £2 million and land their products in the health sector. And alongside our role with regional businesses, we've also been growing our international business during the COVID crisis. So we thought this might be a piece of work that we just have to put on the back burner. But there are a lot of international companies who we've developed to bring products into the region that were needed by the system. And also we've exported our own businesses who we're supporting out to a variety of countries, Africa, the US, Australia. So we've carried on that service and it's been really successful. So it's helped people on the ground, and we've also been growing jobs and improving the economic growth of the region. And the team are just carrying on doing that. They've stepped up. Our team who work with the services have been matching business products into the health and care sector, and we've been really successful.
We do that. That's kind of one of our skills in a way, in that even before COVID, we were used to assessing offers from companies because that's part of our role. So over the years, we've developed a knack at being able to look at a new product and quickly get a feel for whether that's, well, for a start, needed by the system, and also whether or not there are other significant barriers that would prevent adoption. Like sometimes the products just don't have regulatory approval. Sometimes there's just a bit of a misunderstanding about what part of the system it might fit into. So we've built on that and we've offered that out to the system. So for instance, we had quite a lot of our team deployed into something called TechForce 19, which was a centrally funded call out for technology to help with COVID. And we were on that panel. We helped to go through what was actually in the end hundreds of approaches to government for innovations, which we, you know, spent days trawling through, and then eventually have managed to kind of hone that down to a small number that will add some real value and that can be deployed at pace and make a difference. Because clearly, a lot of the need was here and now. So it wasn't a case of looking into the medium or long term. This was something that was required almost immediately. And thankfully, that was a skill that we had and we were able to offer out at the start, which has been great.
The Innovation Agency is one of 15 academic health science networks tasked with national programmes to spread within our regions. But the relationships have changed, haven't they? So the National Commissioners were probably the primary audience for our work alongside our systems, meeting their needs. How has that changed now? How has the balance of the work that we do changed in terms of meeting the needs of the national commissioners with those national programmes and meeting the needs of our local systems? Has that changed because of COVID?
So I think, Caroline, that we've always been an academic health science network who have really tried to support our local system, and we realise that without them we're not going to deploy any innovation at all, and the national innovations would fit with that. So I would say before COVID our work was probably balanced, a 50-50 split between national programmes and what we were doing locally and how we were supporting local organisations to create a culture where innovation could thrive, adopt and spread some of the innovations that were coming out of the centre and out of our own programmes. But right at the beginning of COVID, our region, our Northwest regional leaders were very keen that we just pivoted and focused on regions. There was a massive need, especially in the Northwest. So it felt like we were 100% regional right at the beginning of the COVID crisis, which was appropriate. It's now feeling a bit more like a 70-30 split, so 70% regional, 30% national programmes. And we've prioritise the national programmes that are appropriate for the COVID situation. So Escape Pain was a face-to-face program that was running for groups of people with musculoskeletal problems. That's going online. So we've pivoted the programs that we think will be helpful to COVID and COVID recovery, so that they can still be used regionally, but they're just delivered in a more appropriate way. So our service split is 70-30 now, seems to be working well. The region seems to be happy with what we're doing. We're giving them the support they need, and we'll keep that under observation and just think about what that looks like and be flexible and adaptable to what the system needs.
And our staff too, I think. We've got an incredibly diverse organisation, which is something I didn't appreciate before I came to work at the Innovation Agency. So some of us, like me, have got clinical backgrounds, but equally we have people who've worked in all different kinds of industry and education over the years. And we've used those skills as an offer out to the system. So we've had some of our staff redeployed into communications roles. Some of our staff have been deployed into the testing and tracing role based on some unique skills that they've had through their previous employments. So where we've been able to, we've made that offer out, and we'll continue to do so as long as they're needed.
So that's where we are at the moment. But what about the future? What do you think the healthcare landscape will look like, say, a year from now?
So I'm going to give a really personal response to this, Caroline. So my background before I came into the NHS was in local government. I'm dealing with the social determinants of health, so housing, having a job, making sure your house was warm, you could feed your kids. So all those things that help us to have a secure base and keep our health strong. And I think this crisis has really showed the disparity between health and social care, the funding, the resources, how it's run. So in a year's time, I would really like to see there be an equal playing field for health and social care and for us all to be working together, so that we can make sure we address those determinants of health and together help our disadvantaged communities to catch up with the non-disadvantaged communities, so that we have an equal playing field for people to have healthier outcomes.
So I think that you need to think back why were AHSNs established in the first place? What was our role? So we're kind of all about accelerating the spread and adoption of innovation, linking together different parts of the system. So whether that's health and social care or industry and academia, and none of that's gone away because of COVID. And in fact, you might argue that it's even more important now that we're there to be able to promote and accelerate the spread of new innovation. So I think that that needs to continue. And what's important for me, I think, in terms of looking to the future, is that we don't just go back to business as usual. What we've seen over the last few months is, in some cases, the deployment of certain clinical models or innovations, which under normal circumstances would have maybe taken years. So if you think about some of the digital consultations models that we've seen, so the Attend Anywhere in secondary care or the AccuRx in primary care, if you'd said to me, how long will it take for every trust in the Northwest to be operating that, I would have said, well, you're talking about years and years. But we've done that. We've managed to get that out to the system and everybody using it in an amazingly short space of time. So that shows we can do it when we need to. And so we need to look at how well those innovations and changes have operated. Not everything's been perfect by any means. So we need to capture that. We need to do some rapid evaluation. And then we need to really hold on to the stuff that's shown to be good. So I think our short-term role is to be involved in that, is to look at how some of those changes have made a difference to both clinicians and to patients, what we should stop, what we should keep, and then what we should actually put even more resource behind. And hopefully that will, I think, change the face of clinical delivery forever. I don't think things will ever be the same. I don't think my role here at the Innovation Agency will ever be the same in terms of how I work. But equally, I think other colleagues in the NHS will see that their roles will change beyond recognition, really, in the future compared to pre-COVID days. And we just have to make sure that's a positive thing, not least because of, you know, all of the people that have lost their lives and all the families that have been affected during this, you know, terrible period. So we owe it to them to make the most that we can out of this very, very difficult situation.
So if you're going to pick one of these positive changes that you want to continue, what would that be?
For me, it's back to this business of being able to cut through some of the red tape and the bureaucracy. What I've seen during the last few months is commissioners, providers and regulators all working together. So it's been obvious that they've all had a common goal. But it shows that we can do that. Different parts of the system can collaborate for the benefit of a patient or patients or society more generally. So it's not losing that. We've shown that we can do it. And so I'd like to see that collaboration carry on.
Yeah, so I would agree with that. I think collaboration across the system, across health and social care, reaching out to those areas that are less resourced, such as care homes, where we've seen absolutely awful devastation because of COVID, that the system works together and we get rid of some of these artificial barriers that exist between us. Residents want to see us as one system looking after them throughout the whole life course. So if we can hold on to some of the changes that we've made during the COVID crisis, that will stand us in good stead for moving forward. And for us as an innovation agency, will help us to prioritise some of those innovations that will make a difference to people's lives over the long term, not just short-term inputs, but how can we all do that together to make sure that we're reducing health inequalities and letting people have longer, healthier lives.
Thank you. Dr. Liz Meir and Dr. Phil Jennings, thank you.
And we'll be hearing from more leaders in healthcare in future podcasts, so do subscribe to our channel to make sure you don't miss them. If you'd like to find out more about the work of the Innovation Agency, visit our website, innovationagencynwc.nhs.uk. Thank you for listening.